Isn't it crazy that America is turning 250 years old? I mean, look how far we've come. Now, we've got coolers in our sofas, light-up cup holders, and power-articulating headrests. When it comes to furniture worthy of this major milestone, Bob's Discount Furniture has all the styles all of America wants at the everyday low prices we deserve, backed by tons of five-star reviews. Check out the Sedona Power Reclining Sofa, a genuine leather one-stop shop for relaxation with built-in charging, cup holders, and supportive bobopedic seats, perfect for lounging in the AC all day. You can even complete the look with the matching love seat and recliner. Throwing summer parties? The HomeWorks dining set features comfy bobopedic seating and clever storage built right into the table and bench. Or customize your space with the customer favorite modular Bob Sectional. It has over 1,000 five-star reviews, family-proof construction, and wireless charging for hundreds less than the competition. At only $250 per piece, building your dream sectional is incredibly affordable. Celebrate the 4th at Bob's. It's where America shops for furniture.
Hey parents, we all know summer break is for fun, but it's also a time when kids can start losing some of the progress they made during the school year. We want them to stay engaged and keep those young minds active. Between camps, vacations, and family time, it can be tough to keep a learning routine going. That's why I want to tell you about IXL. IXL is an award-winning online learning platform that helps kids truly understand what they're learning. Whether they're building math confidence, strengthening reading and writing skills, or reviewing science concepts. From pre-K through 12th grade, IXL offers personalized interactive learning that adapts to each child's level and pace. It's an easy way to keep learning going through the summer and helps kids feel confident heading into the next school year. Studies show kids who use IXL score higher on tests, proven in all 50 states. And get this, IXL is used in 96 of the top 100 school districts in the U.S. That's a huge endorsement. Make an impact on your child's learning. Get IXL now. And listeners can get an exclusive 20% off IXL membership when they sign up today at IXLLearning.com/audio. Visit IXLLearning.com/audio to get the most effective learning program out there at the best price.
The early days of 2025 were dominated by coverage of the beginning of Donald Trump's second term, and particularly the work of the Department of Government Efficiency, or DOGE. Within just days of inauguration, entire agencies were gutted, budgets slashed, and programs halted. The underlying philosophy of DOGE is that public servants are wasteful and corrupt, at best incompetent, at worst malicious. This cynical view of government and bureaucratic inefficiency has been around for a long time, but it was center stage once again in the first months of 2025, and it didn't stay contained to our federal government. A student at Brown University was inspired to follow in DOGE's footsteps by searching for waste in the administration of Brown University. In doing so, he was subject to a student conduct investigation and mocked by some of his peers. But as he says it, time has vindicated him. I'm Ian Mont. This week on Campus Files, bloat at Brown. DOGE comes to Brown University.
I liked many things about Brown, such as the fact that they have the open curriculum. They didn't force you to take classes that you didn't want to take.
That's Alex Che. Alex arrived at Brown as a freshman in 2023, and he's pretty open about why he chose Brown.
That's sort of the answer that you tell people if you don't want to seem like you only care about prestige. But the real reason is that Ivy League schools like Brown are shown to increase your earning prospects. Also, I'm a legacy to Brown, which I acknowledge, and so I probably had an unfair advantage compared to the median applicant. I also went to Andover, a prestigious boarding school for high school, which is another unfair advantage compared to the median applicant. Employers trust these schools as gatekeepers of talent, and that's the real reason why I chose to go to Brown, is because it's prestigious, and I felt that it would help my career.
As both a legacy and a graduate of an elite prep school, Alex was not a particularly unusual entrant at Brown. But going in, he already had a unique reputation.
In high school, I started writing a column for the Boston Globe when we had the landmark Supreme Court ruling Students for Fair Admissions versus Harvard.
The case Alex is talking about effectively made race-based affirmative action illegal in college admissions. The case was based on claims that affirmative action made it harder for students of Asian descent, like Alex, to get admission to college.
And so I wrote a few columns about why I believe that was the correct ruling and why we shouldn't judge students by their race in deciding who to accept into colleges. I got invited to do a few Fox News interviews of that too. And some of these went viral, and these ended up in the group chats of all of the incoming freshman class at Brown. And so the moment that I stepped foot on campus at Brown, everybody was already suspect about me.
Alex brought existing connections to conservative organizations, which gave him a unique opportunity.
Donors reached out to me and they wanted me to restart sort of a libertarian conservative type publication at Brown. And these are sort of counterpoints to sort of the more traditional, as opposed to the Harvard Crimson or the Stanford Daily News. These sort of give an alternate perspective for these voices that are more marginalized because they're more right wing. And so I thought this was a cool idea.
Alex was approached by the Fund for American Studies, a libertarian think tank, which, among other things, provides funding for alternative media on college campuses. With this opportunity, Alex revived the Brown Spectator, a defunct conservative-leaning student paper.
I had known about the Brown Spectator for a while. I guess the history is that it was sort of this right-wing alternative to the Brown Daily Herald, which is the biggest newspaper here. So the president of the Brown Republicans, Ben Marcus, loved this idea as well, and we decided to work together. He was the editor-in-chief, I was a publisher, and we brought in people who were interested in being writers. And there was a good group of maybe about 20 people who liked the mission, and they wanted to write articles.
A short while later, The Spectator held a writers' meeting to assign pieces for the first run of the paper.
In the writers' meeting, he thought that the publication should try to be as provocative as possible. And he said, I think we should be the campus's Fox News.
That's Kareem Zodi. Kareem is from British Columbia, and like Alex, he also leans conservative. He came to Brown expecting to be challenged by a comparatively liberal student body. And he was excited to hear about the Brown Spectator because it was supposed to be a space for debate. But what he didn't love was the idea that the paper should think of itself like Fox News. And he told Alex as much.
He said, well, you know, Fox News is the most popular news source in America. Everyone watches it. It gets so much attention. And we want people to actually pay attention to what we're writing, not just to ignore it. I basically believed that you shouldn't really pursue notoriety at all costs because like the Fox News approach on campus would just lead to liberal people making fun of the publication or being offended by it and not engaging with the ideas that might have been presented in it. And Alex didn't seem to be concerned by that. He seemed to define the success of the publication simply by how much attention it could get.
In the same meeting, Alex talked about the fact that Brown was raising tuition by about 5%, so that the total cost of attendance would be about $97,000 a year.
We were discussing, like, when is this going to become six figures for a year of college tuition? I mean, at this current rate, like soon, by the end of the decade. And so we were discussing what people would write about, and I was like, I'm going to write about this. I'm going to do some research on this.
Rising tuition is a problem across the country, from community college to Ivy League. The real causes of rising tuition are debated and complex. One leading theory argues that schools charge basically as much as they can expect to receive from either students or federal loans, and that increases in federal loan funding incentivize schools to raise tuition. Basically, from the school's perspective, if the money is available, why not take it? But straight from the jump, Alex had a different cause in mind. Administrative bloat.
I was actually inspired by a Brown alum who my dad knew personally when they went to Brown, Andrew Yang, the class of 96, I believe. He ran for president as a Democrat in 2020, and around then, during his presidential campaign, he released a book called The War on Normal People. But among other things, he also talks about problems with the educational system, and then he was the one who introduced it to me. Because he also pointed out this concept of administrative bloat as being responsible for increasing the cost of tuition.
Basically, the idea is that over time, more and more administrators are hired for unnecessary roles, raising costs, and ultimately requiring increases in tuition. Kareem remembers Alex describing this idea in the writers' meeting.
The impression that I got from Alex based off the things that he said was, even if he couldn't get any specific information about administrative bloat or he couldn't make any real investigation work, I got the impression that Alex was going to write a fiery article criticizing it. I think we discussed him potentially interviewing people, and he kind of implied that he would do it in a kind of antagonistic way, and me and some other people in the publications thought that was a bad idea. In general, his approach seemed to be, let's attack these people that I disagree with ideologically.
But Alex also had another strategy in mind. He was studying computer science and thought he could bring some of those skills into the project.
And so I thought we could apply some technical leverage to this by performing web scraping on contact databases. And we were. And so we were able to find all the administrators and their email addresses and put together sort of this investigative project. I really wanted to do a survey. And I guess Elon Musk and the federal government with Doge took a similar approach.
Just a couple weeks earlier, in late February of 2025, Elon Musk directed the federal government to email federal workers, asking them to describe the work they did over the last week. Musk stated that a failure to respond would be taken as a resignation.
I guess it was an important question to understand what all these people do, is because from their titles, it's often vague.
So Alex began his project by using basic web scraping tools to compile a list of staff at Brown University from the university's internal HR and finance system. Now, it's important to note that there are two main kinds of employees at a university, staff and faculty. To oversimplify, faculty are people who teach. Staff are basically everyone else. Alex is only concerned with staff. So Alex now had a list of 3,805 staff members at Brown. He then fed that list into an AI model, which he said would assess each person on three criteria.
So it was to flag several things. There was the DEI category. We wanted to flag categories that might involve DEI. The other one was redundancy, where we were seeing if there were too many people doing the same thing. And the last category was called bullshit jobs.
I should also say, Alex uses the term we to describe his work on this project. But it's important to note that he's doing this work on his own. The staff of The Spectator know that Alex is working on some sort of project on tuition costs, but they don't know exactly what he's doing, nor are they assisting in the work.
We asked several questions. One of what is like, what are your daily tasks or something to that effect? We asked something about how would Brown students be impacted if your job was removed? We asked them to comment on sort of the AI-generated rating that we had created as well.
With all this data in hand, Alex sent the survey in the middle of the night to avoid being flagged by university IT. A few responses began trickling in, but by 10 a.m., Brown University ordered all staff to ignore the survey. But word still got around quickly, and in short order, Brown had launched a student conduct investigation into Alex. So, Alex thinks, if Brown is scrambling to cover this up, then he must be onto something.
June is here, which means it's finally time to reach for your summer wardrobe. And if you're trying to look good without overheating, Quince is your best bet. Their summer collection has all the warm weather staples: breathable linen, washable silk, and soft organic cotton. I now own their 100% linen pants in more colors than I'd like to admit. And the best part is that you get all that quality without the luxury markup. Everything at Quince is priced 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Quince works directly with ethical factories and cuts out the middlemen, so you're paying for quality, not brand markup. And it's not just clothing. Quince has become a destination for elevated essentials across the home, from kitchen to bedding, making it easy to bring a more premium feel into everyday life. Elevate your summer wardrobe. Go to quince.com/campus for free shipping on your order and 365-day returns. Now available in Canada too. That's quince.com/campus for free shipping and 365-day returns. quince.com/campus.
Sometimes historic events suck. But what shouldn't suck is learning about history. I do that through storytelling. History That Doesn't Suck is a chart-topping history-telling podcast chronicling the epic story of America, decade by decade, from the 18th century to the 20th. Original music and immersive sound design accompany us on our storytelling journey. Listen to and follow History That Doesn't Suck, an Odyssey podcast, available now on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Why have we asked our contractor we found on Angie.com to be our kid's legal guardian? Because he took such good care when redoing our basement that we knew we could trust him to care for our kids, all 8 of them, should something happen to us.
Are you my dad now?
No, sorry, I do basements.
Connecting homeowners with skilled pros for over 30 years. Angie, the one you trust to find the ones you trust. Find pros for all your home projects at Angie.com.
Early on a Tuesday morning in March 2025, Alex Shea sent an email to 3,805 staff members at Brown asking them to justify their jobs. Kareem, a fellow staff writer for the Brown Spectator, learned about the survey for the first time that same morning.
I found it funny initially. I thought it was funny because of the scale of the thing and how kind of audacious it was. It's kind of shocking, so I found it funny. But then kind of reflecting a bit more on it and seeing the reaction, I pretty quickly started to think that this was a mistake.
To Kareem, part of the mistake was the scale. See, staff includes more than just upper admin. It includes dining staff, custodial and maintenance staff, people whose roles are clearly essential to any university.
It wasn't like a detailed survey about the specifics of these people's employment. It was kind of like a, can you please respond to this rating that I've calculated and explain why it's accurate or inaccurate. And it went out to, from what I can tell, literally everyone that he could find online that was employed by Brown.
And to make matters more complicated, the staff at the Brown Spectator were learning of what Alex had done at the same time as the campus and the public.
It came as a shock to me and pretty much everyone else on the publication when it dropped. Alex made a website and he published the website and sent all the emails. I believe that he didn't discuss it with his other members of the leadership team. And that frustrated them because their name was tied to the Spectator too, and they wanted to know what was happening before it happened, and they didn't.
But in Alex's eyes, he was accomplishing his goal, which was all that mattered.
There's just a huge reaction on campus on Tuesday. Everybody's talking about it on SideChat, which is the anonymous messaging app. It spills over on Twitter and Blue Sky. This really got people talking, which I guess I was happy about.
But Kareem's recollection was a bit different than Alex's.
In the dining hall, I think, in the days following that, I would hear people. On one occasion, I heard somebody talking about this. So, did you hear about that kid that sent all those emails? And the sentiment that I was gathering on campus was that, yeah, everybody was kind of uniformly against what happened. They would say, yeah, that guy, you know, he was such an idiot. Like, that's so stupid. I can't believe he did that. So yeah, it was a big deal on campus. A lot of people were talking about it, but it wasn't like anybody was talking about the issue of administrative bloat. People were just talking about the spectacle of what he'd done.
The story had spread well beyond the bounds of campus. Alex was now getting messages from reporters looking to cover his project.
I believe the first reporter was from the Chronicle of Higher Education, and I did an interview with her. The article hadn't run yet, and I got a notice from Student Conduct, and they informed me that I was under a preliminary investigation for a myriad of charges that sounded ridiculous. Initial things that they were investigating me for were emotional/psychological harm, invasion of privacy, misrepresentation, because they said that I misrepresented myself as a journalist for the Brown Spectator because I wasn't actually a journalist, they said, and violation of the technology policy.
Brown University was not taking Alex's project lightly. They were considering 4 charges against him. Specifically, the charges were that Alex misrepresented himself as a reporter for The Spectator, which was, at the time, not a recognized student organization. That Alex violated campus policy by accessing confidential university data from internal HR systems and then sharing it publicly. And finally, that Alex had inflicted emotional harm on some staff by publicly labeling them or their positions as either harmful or illegal. But by starting this investigation, Brown gave Alex some very valuable ammunition. Here's Kareem.
I thought Brown's response was a bit heavy-handed, and I didn't really agree with it. And I say that partially because it really played into Alex's hands. I got the impression that he was able to use this to his advantage to kind of get more attention.
Alex did exactly that.
More reporters started reaching out. Then there was a Newsweek article. There was an article in the New York Sun and the Washington Times. And then Pirate Wires, sort of, which is this tech blog, reached out to me and they wanted me to write a blog post on the Tuesday, 2 weeks after I sent out the email. And Elon Musk himself retweets this article that I write for Pirate Wires. And because he has so many followers, then it gets really big. Then there are TV segments about this, articles in every publication you could think of.
The post Alex wrote for Pirate Wires was titled, "I used AI to email 3,800 Ivy League bureaucrats. Now my school is investigating me." Musk retweeted the article with the caption, "Wow," a post which received 7.5 million views. Alex also contacted the Foundation for Individual Rights and Expression, also known as FIRE. FIRE quickly helped him formulate a response to the investigation. After the initial flurry of press and investigations, things quieted down.
And then it died down for a bit, because so far this is just an investigation. And then, I guess maybe this is a month out, now Brown decides that they're formally charging me with misrepresenting myself as a journalist and violating the technology policy.
These pared-down charges would be tried before an administrative review meeting, where a university employee would act almost like a judge, ruling on Alex's guilt. But shortly before the hearing, Alex received word that one of the charges had been dropped. Alex was no longer being charged with misrepresenting himself as a journalist, but he is still being charged with scraping data from private university systems and making it public. Finally, the day of Alex's hearing arrives.
Like, it would strike you as something where there's not a lot of due process. Like, you're not allowed to bring an attorney into the room. You're not even allowed to have like a faculty advisor present. None of these protections are afforded. You're not allowed to cross-examine the deans. And essentially the way that it's set up, though, to their credit, is that there's a neutral arbitrator who initially was actually an administrator, but I was successfully able to get the administrator removed for a conflict of interest and replaced a professor. Because again, this was an email targeting administrators, not professors.
Sometime later, a decision is reached.
The charges go away. And there's a new round of media articles after that saying that this is the correct decision.
But through all of this, others on The Spectator, like Kareem, were being more vocal in disagreeing with Alex. Kareem even decided he's going to use The Spectator itself to call out the problems with Alex's work.
Hi, it's Sierra Miller. I can't wait for you to check out my new collection of shoes and accessories at Designer Shoe Warehouse. If you love shoes as much as I do, then trust me, I got you. From cute sneakerinas to the perfect flip-flops to stunning heels, these shoes are all style, no drama. It's a girl's girl summer, and DSW has just the shoes. Shop the Sierra Miller collection right now at your DSW store or dsw.com.
The right window treatments change everything. Your sleep, your privacy, the way every room looks and feels. At Blinds.com, we've spent 30 years making it surprisingly simple to get exactly what your home needs. We've covered over 25 million windows and have 50,000 five-star reviews to prove we deliver. Whether you DIY it or want a pro to handle everything from measure to install, we have you covered. Real design professionals, free samples, zero pressure. Right now, get up to 45% off site-wide, plus get a free professional measure at Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions apply.
After all the charges were cleared, Alex felt he'd proven his point. As he tells it, Brown had failed to successfully prosecute him for calling out waste at the university. And he kickstarted a conversation both on and off campus about administrative bloat. And all the while, the Brown Spectator, the newly restarted paper, was set to publish its first full run. Kareem had written a piece about graffiti on campus, but then at the last minute, he decided to scrap that piece and write about Alex instead.
The argument that I wanted to make was that Alex took a reasonable issue to be concerned with. The idea of administrative bloat and even criticizing DEI, I think, is reasonable. But he approached it in an unreasonable manner and in a manner that undermined any kind of productive engagement that he could have had with people that maybe disagreed with him or any attempt at actually unearthing newsworthy information. because he didn't do either. He didn't have a productive conversation with anyone, in my view, and he didn't uncover anything that was worthy of note. All he did was get attention for himself, which I think is maybe from his own perspective worthwhile, but that doesn't do anything to advance the issues that he was supposedly most concerned with.
I asked Karim to tell me what specifically he had in mind with these critiques of Alex. One critique was Alex's use of AI models, which are known to often hallucinate information and tend to thoughtlessly adopt and regurgitate the viewpoints of the person using them. Imagine if instead Alex had presented the same data to the model and asked the model to describe how valuable each person is to the university. Another point of contention for Karim was how Alex handled the survey.
Clearly, if you're interested in getting responses, like genuine responses from people, it doesn't make sense to assign them a rating that you predetermine that their job isn't meaningfully important and kind of imply that they should be laid off, and then ask them to defend themselves. I don't think any reasonable person should think that they're going to get productive responses with that sort of approach.
And finally, there's Alex's approach towards DEI on campus. Earlier, you heard Alex talk about his views on affirmative action, which he thinks is a misguided way to address racial disparity in college admissions. He feels similarly about so-called DEI programs.
I'd identify myself as a libertarian. So I'm somebody who believes in like financial efficiency and equality. And so I oppose things like affirmative action and DEI, because I feel like these concepts are also things that go against the concept of meritocracy.
Alex also justifies his anti-DEI position by pointing to executive orders from the Trump administration, which intend to make DEI illegal in federal programs. But Karim felt the way Alex went about this was misguided and inconsistent.
The kinds of DEI that Alex was flagging weren't the kinds of DEI that I think he should have been worried about. So he was flagging people on campus that were responsible for coordinating affinity groups on campus and then organize events for these various groups. Interestingly, I don't think he flagged the Hillel or like the Brown Jewish Center, because I don't see why he wouldn't. That's also another affinity group. But there's nothing about those that has anything to do with affirmative action, for example, which is, I think, the actual issue.
So Karim wrote a new piece for the first issue of The Spectator titled Against Bloat at Brown. In it, he argues that both Alex and Bloat at Brown failed in their objective of starting a conversation because the way Alex went about it put all the attention on him. Karim contacted Alex while writing the piece and asked if he wanted to comment. Alex didn't respond, but he did read the piece when it was published.
I guess I disagree with the substance of it. I think he described it as needlessly provocative, or I think we're just starting an important conversation to be had. It led to people caring about this issue, and ultimately led to layoffs, which are addressing this budget deficit that we're having. And so I think in retrospect, it completely was the right move, and it was productive, and it achieved the desired results. And so I think his analysis on this is just wrong.
You may have caught Alex mentioning layoffs there. In September of 2025, Brown announced it would lay off 48 employees and eliminate 55 unfilled job openings in an effort at cost savings.
I view this as vindication, because I think this is the correct thing to do. This is what I've been advocating all along. They tried to demonize me and say that I was wrong and that they needed all these administrators. But I guess the truth has come out and that the school will function fine with 103 positions gone.
While Alex is claiming victory, Brown University says otherwise. In a statement to Campus Files, a Brown spokesperson called these claims entirely fictional and said the cuts were due to, quote, expected declines in federal research funding, the persisting threat of deep cuts to indirect cost reimbursement for research grants to higher education, and other federal policy changes that will affect tuition revenue. Karim also pointed to federal cuts as the cause.
First of all, the obvious and I think better explanation for all of this is the fact that Brown has had to pay a massive fine to the Trump administration.
Brown has agreed to pay $50 million over the course of 10 years in order to restore access to federal research funding. Brown also settled a case accusing the university of illegally coordinating with other universities to fix prices. Brown is paying an estimated $19.5 million settlement for that case as well. And as for Brown's general financial state, they have carried a deficit for much of the last decade. Some portions of that may be due to administrative staff, but compared to similar schools and stronger financial positions, Brown spends only a little above average. In fact, Brown's total revenue is $1.5 billion. For an institution that big, it's a bit of a hard sell to say a few extra staff positions are to blame for increasing tuition and layoffs.
How, if at all, did what Alex did with bloat at Brown have an impact on campus?
I don't think it changed anyone's mind. It didn't take any liberal person that was in favor of DEI on campus and not concerned with the issue of administrative bloat and make them against DEI and concerned with the issue of administrative bloat. I think it further put people off the kind of conservative sphere online. Alex really closely associated himself with that. Like, he went on Charlie Kirk and he went on Fox News and this sort of thing. So I think people would see that and think that that was cringe. So I don't think it changed much on campus.
One can certainly argue about the impact or success of Alex's project at Brown, but there's no doubt he's turned the project into a success for himself. By the end of the school year, Alex had decided to drop out of Brown. He applied for a job at Palantir, the developer of mass surveillance technology, and had received an offer. And after a few months there, he left to start a new company, capitalizing on the attention he gained at Brown.
We just found $250 million in fraudulent government spending over the past month. But that's nothing compared to nearly $500 billion that happen every year. And that's why we raised $5.1 million to start the anti-fraud company, a private sector DOGE that saves your tax dollars from greedy corporations.
As for Kareem, he's applying to law school and actually wrote about bloat at Brown in his personal statement for his application. He also told me that after attending Brown, he's much more understanding of people with differing views, particularly the arguments of both socialists and communists. He still identifies as conservative. If you've got a story idea, we would love to hear about it. Send us an email at campusfilespod@gmail.com. And if you're loving this podcast, be sure to click follow on your favorite podcast app so you never miss an episode. While you're there, leave us a review and a 5-star rating. Campus Files is an Odyssey original podcast hosted by Margot Gray and Ian Mont. Our executive producers are Leah Reese-Dennis and Lloyd Lockridge. Campus Files is produced by Ian Mont and Margot Gray. Sound design and engineering by Andy Jaskowitz and Zach Clark. Legal support by Laura Berman and Melissa Jean. Original music by Davey Sumner. Special thanks to Maura Curran, Josephina Francis, Hilary Schuff, Eric Donnelly, Kate Hutchison-Rose, Sean Cherry, Kurt Courtney, and Lauren Vieira.
This is the sound of captivity. This is the sound of rescue. And this is the sound of freedom. Give Armenia's captive bears a second chance by supporting International Animal Rescue. Call 508-826-1083 or search The Great Bear Rescue to learn more.